You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hello, mate. You're right. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, not bad, not bad. Looking forward to tonight's pod. You got everything prepped and ready?
Yeah, mate. I've got my notes, my equipment's all set up. Yeah, so I'm good to go.
Fantastic. You got your drink. You forgot it last time.
Yeah, I did, didn't I? There's a reason for that, though. I've actually run out of beer, so no beer again for me tonight.
Back-to-back episodes without beer. That's unlike you. How does a free case of beer sound like?
Almost sounds too good to be true, but I suspect you're about to tell me more, Ben.
I am indeed, Mike. Our friends at Beer 52 are offering a free case of 8 exclusive craft beers. Simply go on to www.beer52.com/Vic and simply cover the postage charge of $6.95 to claim your free case now.
Yeah, absolutely. Beer 52 is the biggest beer club in the world, and each month they send their members a case of beer from across the globe. The Beers of the World case features 8 unique beers from 8 different countries, including South Korea, South Africa and Sweden, and that's what is on this month. And it's an absolute belter of a deal. It's not stuff that you'll find in supermarkets, so it's not just off-the-shelf stuff. It really is unique. It's hoppy, it's citrusy, it's tangy. All of the above, tick every box possible because it is there. So make sure you claim your free case now.
Sounds like a fantastic range, Mike. If dark beer is not your thing, you can choose the light only case. And also included is the award-winning Ferment magazine, and also get a couple of tasty snacks to go along with your beers too. Even if after all that, you're still unsatisfied, you can simply pause or cancel at any time.
Yeah, head over to all the W's, beer52.com/Vic. That's www.thewordbeer52.com/VIC to claim your free beer now.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hello and welcome to Voices of Vic podcast with me, Ben Ayton, and Mike Duffy. You're here with us for our 200th and first podcast. Didn't realise until Mike put out a tweet earlier for last night's review of the game last night at Vicarage Road, that was actually our 200th episode. Quickly, Mike, before we dive into the Coventry preview, mental that we're still standing. And I didn't even think we'd get past 5 episodes. To be able to hit 200 is, yeah, mind-boggling.
Yeah, it is. I must admit, though, I can't proclaim to having this one counting down and ticking off the episodes to 200 because I actually stumbled across it whilst uploading it and looking back on it this morning and saw it was a 200. So it sort of snuck up upon me. And 200 episodes is absolutely mad. So I think we started this in June 2020. And yeah, I mean, I said it in a personal tweet earlier. The fact is, I didn't think we'd make it, and we almost never did. And there's not enough characters on Twitter for me to talk this, but obviously the reason we're still here is largely down to yourself. You carried it on with James in that Premier League season, and then we had the idea of bringing more people onto the team. So we've now got Joe, Cam and Katie, meaning that we're able to do a lot more. So yeah, it almost did sort of fizzle out, but luckily, thanks to yourself and the others, that's not the case, and here we are, and hopefully we'll be having a similar discussion in another 200 episode time. So yeah, it's been up and down, but it's enjoyable still. And the day that it becomes not enjoyable is probably the day that we pack it in. But yeah, here for the roller coaster that is Watford FC.
I just hope things improve on and off the pitch for Watford if we're still here for another 200 episodes, because my God, the last couple of months have been stressful and draining. Well, to be fair, the last couple of years, from our downfall from the Premier League and just where we are at the moment, and especially with the owners as well. But we won't hype onto it too much. We are here for a Coventry City preview. If you all remember, we had Glenn on from the Sky Blue Hub earlier on in the season back in September, and he is back with us this evening. So I'm just going to get him to enter into our arena, I guess. What do we call this, Mike? Our room, our space, our arena, my living room, your bedroom. Anyway, Glenn, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, well done on 200 episodes. You've lasted longer than Watford managers do.
Love that. Thank you very much. He's here all night, everyone. But yeah, Glenn, thanks for coming on again tonight. Really appreciate it. We was talking to you in depth earlier on in the season regarding Coventry City. Obviously, just want to start to maybe going back to that 3-3 draw back in September. It was an end-to-end game, I think. Defensive issues on both sides. Gifted each other a lot of goals. Entertaining game. What did you think of the game back then in September?
Both sides decided to do dog and duck Sunday league defending, basically. I think they tried to outdo each other of how badly we could defend. I think you guys probably just about topped it when you scored the own goal. But yeah, it was a crazy game. I honestly think you've managed to screw it up more than you did the season before with the 2-2, which I never thought you'd do. But yeah, we were very poor defensively. And that was kind of a theme for most of the games in the run-in. With about five, we just defended poorly and just looked all over the shop. From a team that was pretty much rock solid, it just wasn't working, the back five. So I was quite happy with the point in the end, to be brutally honest. I thought you guys probably should have won it if I don't know how you say his name, the Dutch lad, hadn't passed it back past Backman. And yeah, and then you were 3-2 up and we kind of got a lucky goal late on with Godden.
Yeah, believe it or not, Watford, I think, might be the only team in the Championship that has scored two own goals from outside their own penalty box this season. We did it again last night. So hopefully we don't do it again this Saturday.
Yeah, I went to that game at the CBS, and I come away with the feeling of basically what Glenn has just said. We gifted them three goals, and on another day, we're coming away with the 3 points, and it's a really pleasing performance. But just defensively, and it seemed to be the theme of the season around that. I know it was early on in the season, but it seemed to be sort of the running theme was that we were gifting the opposition these goals, and it was so, you know, needless, and we just didn't need to do it. So it's really, really frustrating. But Glenn, I wanted to ask, you know, recently it seems like your form's been a bit up and down. In the last five games, you've won two, lost two and drawn one. You recently beat Rotherham 5-0 at home. As Ben said, welcome to the club of beating Rotherham 5-0 at home. They are quite poor. But has consistency or inconsistency, has that been a big issue for Coventry this season? Is that why you're not sort of knocking on the door of the playoffs, sort of like you were last season?
I think we've had injuries. We lost Ben Sheaf he went off injured. I think it was against Bristol City. I think it was, or was it Sheffield Wednesday? I can't remember. Ben Sheaf went off, and he's been a big miss. Obviously, Sakamoto's got quite a bad injury, which we still don't know what it was, but it's obviously something spinal or back-related, so he's out for the season. Yeah. And he was playing really well, but he was getting rough-housed. Every week, he was just getting clattered or elbowed or kicked. And yeah, and his form had kind of dipped off. We lost Jamie Allen. He got his cheekbone smashed by Bernard at Sheffield Wednesday, which we were 4-1 up. The game's gone and dusted it, dead and dusted, and he's just laid one on Allen, and that's left us really short in midfield. And we didn't really strengthen in January, which has kind of come back to bite us on the arse, to be blunt. We looked at Mason Clark at Peterborough, and we wouldn't pay the extra $750,000 to get him permanently now, and we probably could do with him given the fact Sakamoto's been out. And I think we were sniffing around the lad that you were after. Is it Kiprianu, the midfielder? I think McCann said you bid for him. I know there's a few we like there. Yeah. So
I think you take your pick at Peterborough. There's some decent players.
Bodies in that area. Positive is we bought Victor Torpin. Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a few we want there from what McAntony said in his Hard Truth podcast. I think we've got an option on one. We've obviously got Clark in the summer, and I think there's at least another one we want. So, yeah. We're just a couple of people short. And, yeah, we don't seem to want to use the loan market. And maybe just one loan would have give us some bodies. We obviously lost Ayari. We went back to Brighton and ended up at Blackburn. We let McFasden go to Blackburn. So, yeah, we're just a little bit short. Probably just need one or two experienced pros just to get us by. But we're still in with a chance. The results have kind of gone our way. And, yeah, I think Saturday's a must win for both sides for different reasons. I think Ismail needs a win to keep himself in the job. And I think we need a win, hoping that Leicester do us a favour and take some points off Hull. We close the gap on them.
Yeah, it's an interesting championship season at the moment. I can't believe that the points in between the bottom three to 11th, 12th in the tables being like 6-7 points. It's ridiculous. And fair play to the teams fighting down there at the bottom of the table. Like the run at Sheffield Wednesday and QPR have been on recently is incredible. And they've really sucked Stoke City into it. And I really fear for them this season. But when you turn the attention to the other end of the table as well, the playoff chase is really interesting, and this is why it's the best league in the world, and you're well in the mix for another playoff spot this season. But let's talk about Tuesday night's game for you in a little bit more depth now. So Rotherham United at home. I watched the highlights not so long ago. I didn't realize you was 4-0 up in about half an hour. It was a very dominating performance. I think Johansson helped you on your way. He came for a cross and dropped it. And Ellisim, we've just lost Glenn as well. So I'll carry on talking about the Coventry game because I watched the highlights earlier. So, Mike, you probably saw it. Victor Johansson, who you highly rate, and I like him as well and think that he could be decent for Watford maybe, or someone we could maybe go after. There was a cross came into the box after a couple of minutes. He came for it and dropped it in the six-yard box, and it just fell to Ellis Sims, and he tapped it away for 1-0.
He did. I actually said that I mentioned this last night on our podcast that if that opportunity fell to Watford where he drops a ball, I don't think we have a player in Ellis Sims' position to just nod it in, because it is literally the easiest goal that he will ever score. And, you know, Johansson's dropped it and he's like, oh, sweet, bang, in it goes. I don't think at the moment, the way we are in the final third, I don't think we have a player that situates himself in that position and therefore is able to just nod it home. And that's probably sums up how Coventry are a lot different to Watford and pose a different threat. But carry on, Ben. I know you were asking a question before we lost Glenn.
That's all right. Yeah, Glenn, you're back now. So I was just saying that we were talking about Coventry's 5-0 victory over Rotherham, and I wasn't aware that he was 4-0 up after about half an hour, 40 minutes or so. Yeah. Ellis Sims had a perfect hat trick as well. But Rotherham did help you on the way, didn't they? Victor Johansson made a mess of a ball into a box, and Ellis Sims, I don't think he's going to have the easiest tap in. Well, he headed it in, didn't he, across the line? But yeah. Rotherham, they aren't great, but they helped you on the way Tuesday night, didn't they?
Yeah, but they're the sort of team we make hard work of. Like this season, we struggled. We didn't beat Huddersfield at home. In last season, Rotherham got a draw against us. We lost at home to Blackpool and Wigan. We made hard work of Wigan. We tend to struggle against those sides, and we haven't maybe got the magic that we had last season in Hamer and Jokeres. But we're probably a bit more of an all-rounded goal threat, and we can chip in with goals from everywhere now. And yeah, I think it's now you don't just think I've got to stop Jokeres and Hamer. But yeah, Rotherham were very poor, but I think we made them look poor, and we were on it. And that's just a frustration that Maidstone and Rotherham, we've attacked them, imposed our game on them, and Preston and West Brom, we've not done anything until we're 2-0 down, and you're chasing shadows against two of the form sides in the league. So yeah, it's up and down, but I think we've still got a chance, and Sims is getting the goals, and I'm quite happy for him because he got absolutely hammered by Don Goodman on Sky on Friday night about he's shooting too early and blah blah blah. Well, I know why he shoots early, because you look at the third goal he scored, it's an absolute screamer. That's why he was taking shots early, because he's got it in his locker. But yeah, I think Sims will probably cause you guys some problems, but I think he's better with Wright alongside him now. I think we need two up top, and we've kind of had to go that way because of losing Sakamoto. I don't think we can play O'Hare and Palmer in the same team. I think they're too much of a muchness without playing one of them out of position. So one goes wide left, or O'Hare goes wide right, or you're playing Hadji right, wide right, and I just think you're messing with it. So I'd rather just stick with two up top, and Palmer's the one for the 10 role at the moment, and O'Hare has to sit on the bench, unfortunately.
Well, I'm going to speak about him in a minute, but you mentioned there making hard work of Rotherham, drawing with them, making hard work of Wigan. All sounds very, very familiar, especially last season, Ben. And you mentioned about Don Goodman hammering players. Funnily enough, Don Goodman hammered Watford like you wouldn't believe when we drew 0-0 in the lockdown season at St Andrews. And against Coventry, exactly, yeah. He gave us a hammering of our lives. So we're in that hammered by Don Goodman club. But you just mentioned there, Callum O'Hare, he's having to settle for a place on the bench. Now, personally for me, I think he's got the quality to play in the Premier League. There's no doubt about that. He scored 9 goals and assisted 4 times this season. How big of a player is he? I know, obviously, you've just mentioned he's having to settle on the bench, but is that a sign that you have got a little bit of depth, that you're able to put a player of his calibre on the bench? And also, if he is playing on the bench, do you worry about losing him this summer? Do you think his head might be turned? Or
I think his head's already turned, to be brutally honest. He's out of contract in the summer. Unfortunately, it's one of the last mess-ups by Sisu as our owners, was they basically let Hamer, Jokeres and O'Hare all sign deals that didn't have a year's option in the club's favour to extend it. So we had to sell Hamer and Jokeres this summer gone, because we couldn't keep them, and they were never going to sign a new deal. It was quite adamant that Jokeres wasn't. Hamer was, I don't think he ever was, but he was kind of playing the field a bit. O'Hare, I don't think he's ever come out and said, I'm not signing a deal, but he's basically fobbed it off and said, I'm leaving it to my agent. When he came back, he took a couple of weeks to get up to speed, but his finishing is 10 times better than it used to be. That was the one thing that I would say to you, Mike. If you'd asked me 6 months ago, I would have said Callum O'Hare's finishing is the one thing that's stopping him being a good Premier League player. My worry is that he does a Hamer and goes to the wrong club. I would rather he goes abroad. There's rumours that he's been doing Spanish. I think there's a couple of La Liga clubs that are looking at him. because obviously you go on a freebie. And yeah, it's a bit, it'll be interesting. I think Lyon in France have been rumoured as well. But I just don't like this media circus. There's this one particular Twitter account who's obviously a media guy, and he's obviously got something with O'Hare's agency because they keep leaking stories out, and it's on the day of a game. And then he puts something out on Tuesday about Jake Bidwell. Oh, Jake Bidwell hasn't had a new contract offered. And it just, I don't like that side of it. I think if you just go in, go, get your head down, get us to Wembley, get us promoted. If you don't get another club coming for you, you want to go, you want to stick it a year in the Premier League with Cov, fine. If you want to go, there you go, mate. I can't complain. I'd like you to sign a new deal and we get the money for you, but we can't force him to sign. And I'm sure you've had the problem in the past with Watford players. It's just, yeah, once the, I don't think he's a sort that his head goes, but he's been doing a few things that I don't like back-chatting players, and he pulled out of a challenge at Preston. So, yeah, I think he's a kick up the arse, and if he wants to play against Wolves and showcase himself, he's got to knuckle down in training and show that he's ready for it.
Yeah, I'm the same as Mike. I really rate Callum O'Hara as well, and he maybe against him is he's had a lot of big injuries, hasn't he, that's kept him out of quite a large portion of seasons, and that's maybe been against him. But I think he's got the qualities of like a Jack Grealish, and I don't know whether that's just down to his haircut as well, but he just reminds me of him so much, and his feet are so quick. And some of the goals he scored this season, I think he came off the bench and scored on his return, didn't he, as well, in a home game for you as well. But he just really impresses me. I think I saw today that or a couple of days ago, that he's linked to Rangers and Celtic as well. So, like you say, there's lots of teams already got eyes on him, but I'd like him to stay in England because I do like watching him. He is a very talented guy. We'll talk about Ellis Sims a little bit now. How's he been getting on with Coventry? Obviously, he joined in the summer on a big money move from Everton. Quite a lot of money of that Gorkaresh's deal went on Ellis Sims. And from an outsider looking in, it looked like it was a slow start for Ellis Sims. But in the last nine days, he's got two hat-tricks. Okay, it's Maidstone and Rotherham United. But he is starting to find a bit of consistency now, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a good 1-2 touch finisher. His problem is when he has too much time. If he has time to think about it, he overthinks stuff. And also, I think he's the sort of striker that if he misses one, which class example against West Brom, he made a hash of one challenge, one shot, total pigs here of it, which even the best do. Haaland does it, everyone does it. But I think it just plays on him. He's that sort of, he's quite an introverted lad. And the argument I have with a lot of Cov fans is, look back last season, how many chances Gyökeres missed for us. People forget that. Gyökeres was brilliant, but he missed some absolute sitters for us on occasions. But I like him. A lot of people in the game talk well of him. I think there was Sam Parkin did a piece with Benjamin Bloom, and they were talking about him, and they said he's always liked him from youth level, that he can bully people. He gets a run. He's quite strong. It's just that little bit of quality. It's probably confidence. I don't think he's ever been a number one striker anywhere he's been. He's always been in the shadow of another striker. At Sunderland, he had Stewart, who was getting all the plaudits. I think he was at Blackpool with Gerry Yates. Everton, he never really was the one that they wanted to play regularly. So, yeah, I really like him, and I think he could be the player who fires us in towards the playoffs, because I think that's the one thing maybe Hull and West Brom lack is that 15-20 goal a season. And I think we've got two of them in Roy and Sims, and also we've got Gordon, who chips in with a few goals. O'Hare's on 9. So we could have four players at the end of the season in double figures, which is pretty much unheard of for Cov.
Yeah, that'd be nice. We've our player who's hit double figures already can't seem to hit a barn door at the moment. So you to have four of them is rubbing it in ever so slightly. But one man I want to talk about now is he's quite a popular figure with Cov, and I believe he's injured at the moment. But please tell me if I'm wrong there, is Ben Sheaf. Now, according to the website SofaScore, he's currently rated 7.4 out of 10 for this season. So has he been Mr. Reliable for you this season? And would you maybe go as far as saying, if the season ended now, he would be cast as your player of the season? The beauty of live podcasting, ladies and gents. I don't know if we're having a few connectivity issues there, or whether Ben Sheaf really is that good. There are no words to sum him up. I think we've lost Ben again.
Yeah, it looks like the connection's gone again. But yeah, Ben Sheaf, he looks like one of these guys, Mike, that not many people talk about, but he's Mr. Consistent, isn't he? He does the dirty work, and he's one of those people, his work goes unnoticed at times, and that's how good he is. I think he's been at Coventry for many years. But yeah, is he? Do you know much about Ben Sheaf, or will we wait for Glenn to come back?
Well, my worry is that there are no more words to sum him up. That's my worry, but he's injured at the moment. He's been at Cov since the 2020-21 season. He joined from Doncaster, and he was previously at Arsenal as a kid as well. But I think you've rightly said, you know, the ratings from him for the last few seasons, he's been consistent for them. And yeah. I was listening to the Do Not Scratch Your Eyes podcast. They put their preview out with a Coventry fan earlier, and I was listening to it, and he was waxing lyrical about Ben Sheaf and saying how much of a presence he is in that midfield. And I know we've got Glenn back now, and Glenn, I don't know how much you heard of that, but has his injury been a big miss for you so far this season? Is it quite a gaping hole that he's leaving?
Yeah, he's come out of Hamer's shadow, so to speak. He's added goals to the game as well. He obviously scored two against Sheffield Wednesday. He might actually be back for Saturday because he was back on the grass with his hamstring injury. And Robin said it's 4 to 6 weeks. See, this is where I'm kind of torn. I'm like, do we risk him for the league game on Saturday?
No.
Are they going to save him for the FA Cup? But I think that's the thing. I think Robin might leave him. Robbins might leave him for Wolves because I think we'll need him against Wolves. But him, his ball carrying's got better. He's added goals to his game. That was the one criticism I always had with him, was he doesn't score enough goals. He's added goals to his game. I think he's on four. He might be on four goals this season already, which is good return for him. I honestly think he would walk into a West Ham side, a team of that level in the Premier League. Honestly, I think he's very underrated on it. And yeah, we do miss him. And also, he's been captain now since McFadden went, and Kelly's been out the team. He's been captain and he's been doing really well. So yeah, I think if we have him back for Wolves, he gives us more of a chance. Him and Victor Torp. Victor Torp is one that you guys will watch and you'll go, wow, he's a player. He's come from nowhere out the blue sign for us. And yeah, he's got everything in his game. He can play six, he can play eight, he can strike a shot, he can pick a pass, he can tackle. And yeah, he's good offset pieces. So yeah, he's been an absolute find for a couple of million pounds. So him and Sheaf together really work well. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. But yeah, Sheaf is, Dave Collins is right. Sheaf is one of our key players. And yeah, the fact that we've lost him, it could be the potential reason we miss out on playoffs if he breaks down again.
See, that's going to be my next question, talking about the playoff picture now, because obviously you're eighth in the Championship, 3 points outside the playoffs. Do you see the Sky Blues sneaking into a playoff picture again this year after heartbreak at Wembley last year, or do you think you might just fall short of it?
I'm in a Championship WhatsApp group chat with a load of other podcasts, and I kind of just like look for reasons that I can argue why West Brom and Hull might blow up. And for every argument that there's a reason why I think one of them will blow up, they come back with an argument why they think Cov are going to miss out. So it's interesting. I think we play Hull in our last five games and at the CBS. I think as long as we're within 3 points of them around then, I think we've got a chance against them. But if we miss out, we miss out. But it's crazy. I look at last season and Millwall and Blackburn like a stone at the playoffs. So, and even you guys were not on great form, and still we're in the playoffs. It's a bit odd. So, yeah, I think we've got a chance. If I'd happy now, take it to the last day. We need a win.
Yeah, I couldn't deal with the last day madness. I think going back all those years when we did it, when we had the chance to go up automatically beating Leeds, and then we fluffed up the lines. But then you could say, on the other hand, we didn't beat Leeds and we got the great Deeney moment. So, you know, there's so many, you know, good reasons, but the stress of it, I just couldn't deal with it for me. And I think, you know, the fact that you're knocking on the door of the playoffs in successive seasons, I don't want to speak on behalf of Coventry City fans here, Glenn, but I think when you look at the bigger picture of the journey you've been on, I remember, and I think we even talked about this when you were last on the show, but my cousin used to be the match day announcer at the Notts County ground, and the season that you got promoted from League Two, you had Notts County in the playoffs, and I went to both games because he got free tickets. And Cov were by far and away the best team I'd seen. And I went to quite a few Notts County games that season. And the support that they brought to Meadow Lane that season, the support at the CBS that season as well. And to think you've gone from that, and now you're knocking on the door of the Premier League again, just shows what a journey it's been for Cov. And you know what, fair play. I think I'll always have a little bit of a soft spot for Cov. You know, my fiance was born in, she's from Nuneaton. So there's that little bit of a Coventry link, if you like. And obviously I'm from Birmingham. So I'll always have a bit of a soft spot. I've managed to change our allegiances to Watford now, though. And we do try and get to mostly
change it back. It's not working.
Marrying me. We do try and get to the Watford Cov games, but we won't be there this weekend, unfortunately. But yeah, I'll always have a bit of a soft spot. But one thing that we sort of had to mention, Glenn, and I'm sure you've seen it, because I know what you do with the Sky Blue Hub, you basically retweet a lot of Coventry stuff and you get involved, so everyone has seen this, and that comment from Paul sums up what I'm about to say. Dean Austin, very highly rated and very highly appreciated with his time at Watford, may I add. You've only got to listen to the Troy Deeney four-part interview with Do Not Scratch Your Eyes, and he said when Dean Austin was with Watford, it was largely the work that he did that helped us get promoted and then helped us in the Premier League. And, you know, very respected gentleman, probably up until yesterday evening. So if you do live under a rock and you've not seen this on social media, basically Dean Austin is now the head of recruitment, I believe, at Coventry. And he went to scout Watford. Yeah, that's it. He went to scout Watford last night, or he went to watch Watford. Obviously, he's still got contacts at the club, and we're playing Coventry this weekend and whatnot. I'm not going to read the messages out, because the latest that we know is that he's considering legal action against the bloke who these. So I'm not going to go and start spitting out what's been said, because if he comes after me, I'm fucked. But basically, he's been, the messages were about Watford and what they thought about Watford. What did you guys make of the situation? Obviously, from a Watford point of view, everyone's like, right, and I think Paul's actually just put it in the comments, show it to the players. Like, make sure all the players can see this, and there's your team talk done. But what was it from the Cov point of view? Was that like, shit, you know, we could really do without that extra added pressure now? Or was it just, did you just laugh it off?
I saw it pretty early on, because it appeared in the Championship WhatsApp group. So I know the picture's legitimate. I'm not sure about the content of the WhatsApp messages, whether that's legitimate or not. So that's all I'll say about it. But for a club that had Sakamoto away on our pre-season tour, and we didn't actually announce he'd signed, and the fans took pictures of him at the airport with the team, and we were Googling to find out who he was, Had your right signing got spoiled because someone was by Wrighton and happened to walk by a path by Wrighton with a bush and took a picture of Hadji Wright outside of his shirt, and other Cough fans were checking like flight planner to see about flights for other players coming on. And then, yeah, we've had other fans allegedly mock up sites, news websites saying we were signing someone from Denmark not long after Torp signed. So yeah, it kind of sums up a crazy season, to be honest. We've had some really weird stuff. I'm looking forward to hearing what Mark Robbins says in the press conference about it tomorrow. I think it's all a bit of a storm in the teacup, and I don't think what he actually said was that bad. And I do question, I can't see Mark Robbins being an emoji fan. I don't see him as being the sort of manager to do WhatsApp. I just don't see him being that high tech. You know what I mean? I might be wrong, but yeah, he just doesn't seem like Mark Robbins to be doing emojis. But yeah, it did chuckle me, and yeah, it did the rounds in our podcast, The All Things Sky Blue, and everyone's like, is it real? Is it fake? Then I heard he was taking legal action. I was like, well, why is he taking legal action? And then it was like, then somebody else has edited it, edited the picture to a different WhatsApp message, which is a song we sing about La Tabaudière. and a part of his anatomy, which was quite funny. So yeah, it just shows you how easy you can edit it. But yeah, it's just sums up Cough at the moment. It's just all a bit weird. And yeah, we seem to be rattling a lot of fan bases this season. We've gone from everyone's favourite club to now we celebrate at the end of the game and people criticise it. Like we celebrated beating Leicester the same way we celebrated beating Maidstone. But Leicester fans were like, it's your cup final, blah, blah, blah. But we celebrate the same way. Exactly. It's just like, we seem to be a bit like Luton were last season, kind of rattling people's cages. I hate to say the word Luton. I do apologise. Yeah. But we don't seem to be the team that everyone loves now. And I quite like it that we do rattle teams a bit. So it is quite entertaining. But yeah, I imagine that if Dean Austin's there on Saturday, he won't get the nicest welcome in the world.
No, I think all eyes will be on that press conference tomorrow, like you say. It'll be interesting to see what Mark Robbins says. I'm just glad that he likes the friendly emojis, because he could have definitely maybe stitched himself up by using some naughty ones in there. But yeah, he loves the thumbs up, fingers crossed, praying emojis. We'll leave it as that. I won't say what else was actually supposedly in the message. But I think they're hoping that Valerian Ismail is actually going to be Watford manager still before Saturday. But yeah, on the Watford side of it, Mike, what was your thoughts on it? Obviously, a lot of Watford fans think we should maybe use it as momentum for the game on Saturday. Tell you what, we need something. A kick up the backside would be what I'd give them.
Yeah, I think the way that we've set the team up in the last couple of games shows you that Ismail's getting desperate now, and he's maybe running out of ideas, and he's just thrown the scrapbook away, and he's like, right, we just need to win. It doesn't matter how. I think he said after the Rotherham game that the performance was crap, obviously, but it was all about getting the 3 points, and we got the 3 points. We didn't play pretty, but we got the 3 points, and at the moment, I will take any scrappy 1-0 or any scrappy win you give me. But absolutely, that message, if it is legitimate, obviously, I want to stress that, if it is legitimate, Mr. Austin, I have no money. I'm saving for a wedding. I am fucking skint. Please don't take me to court. But if it is true, then, yeah, you know, print it off. Put it in the changing room. Use that as your team talk. And that stuff about Hoot as well, I have no idea what he's been watching, because there's been a couple of comments from Mark and Paul, and Hoot, for me, he's been one of our best players. He might even go on to win player of the season for me. And to say that he was terrible, I'm like, mate, are you watching the same game as me? I thought Hoot
had on his
game.
Birthday as well, which is just a bit harsh. Like, come on, it's his birthday. Nasty, you can't bastard. Say comments like that.
Nasty bastard. Fuck you, Mark Robbins. How about that? But no, we have to use it as motivation.
Yeah, no, definitely. And tell you what, if it is all legitimate and all that, when it hit 8 o'clock this morning or half eight. Imagine being that guy who took those pictures and then saw Adam Leventhal post saying breaking news, Dean Austin's doing legal proceedings. You'll be shitting your brick, won't you? I've seen that he's quickly put his Twitter profile on private and the tweets have been deleted and all that. So obviously he is shitting himself.
Then the Watford admin has to, if we win on Saturday, he has to reference the messages in the tweet at full time or something. They have to do it. But listen.
The only thing is, Mike, we have to win.
That's the sticking point. That we're trying to get over that bridge at the moment.
That's the one. Anyway, back to our attentions with Coventry City. Glenn, sorry about that. Me and Mike do this quite a lot. We just raffle on about crap. What would your predicted lineup be for the visit to Vicarage Road on Saturday?
I don't think we'll make many changes from the team that played on Wednesday. But Robbins has been tinkering. And that's kind of a reason why we've not been as consistent, because he's chopped and changed the team because he's got this thing about managing players' minutes and blah, 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 which annoys the hell out of me, because I'm a very old school, pick the best team and win the game and then make the subs. Don't moan about you can't rest people when you're 4-0 up at half time and you don't put the kids on. You know what I mean? I think we'll stick with Brad Collins in goal. He's got one of the best shots to save percentages in the Championship. So really happy with him. I think it'll be I don't want a back three, but that's the way he wants to play. So it'll be Latibodier, Bobby Thomas and Liam Kitchen. Jake Bidwell will stay in at left wing back. I would stick with Josh Eccles at right wing back, because I think he's been playing. He was really good there on Tuesday night, but he might bring Milan Banning a wig back in, but he's kind of had a bit of a dip in form because I think he struggled to adapt to the slog that is the Championship, like a lot of foreign players do. So then the midfield will be Torp, and then it's one from three. It'll be Eccles, I assume, if Milan plays wide right wing back. Could be Liam Kelly, but I can't see him playing back-to-back games. But he was really good on Tuesday night. Or the wild card might be Ben Sheaf come straight back in, which I know you guys don't want to see. And then it'll be Casey. I think he'll stick with Casey Palmer because he's hit a bit of a purple patch of form. He's finally showing what he can do, and we're getting the end product from him, which has always been my criticism with him, that he hasn't done it. I think Casey Palmer will play there, but he could bring O'Hare back in quite easily. And then it'll be Hadji Wright and Ellis Sims up front, provided Wright's fit, because Wright went off quite early on second half on Tuesday night. So provided Wright's fit, he'll start with him.
Cool. I don't know about you, Mike, but that worries me. That's a lot of quality in that team. Like, we're talking about Casey Palmer there. I know you like Casey Palmer. I really like Casey Palmer as well. It's going to be a difficult game.
Well, they all are, aren't they? That's the old cliche, but a lot of quality there, and in certain areas it can certainly hurt us, which I'm sure me and you will talk about in a minute, Ben. But in terms of the game, obviously on Saturday, to round off the podcast, Glenn, what would your score prediction be if you was pushed to one?
I think we'll probably nick it 2-1. We'll win. If we draw, it's not the end of the world for us. I think a win, I don't think we can afford to lose, because I think Norwich are going to beat Rotherham. And I hope the Hull slip up. So we just need to kind of keep in touch with them. With your form, I would be disappointed to lose against you guys. But you've been unlucky twice against us. You probably should have had more wins against us recently than you have. I think the last three games we've got a bit lucky against you. So it might be the luck runs out, and we had a bit of luck on Tuesday night. So hopefully a win. I'll go 2-1, and I think Sims might score two, keep his hot streak going.
Yeah, you say that, you know, a draw wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, but for us, we have to win. We're sort of looking at the rest of the fixtures this season, sort of looking over our shoulder as the teams below us start picking up points, and we're like, right, where's the next win going to come from? And that, for me personally, I haven't looked at this game and thought, right, that's where we can take 3 points. So I'm not saying it's a free hit whatsoever. Of course it's not, no game is, but I am a little bit worried. I'm not as confident as, well, I don't think I've seen any Watford fan think that we can get something from the game. Ben, what would your score prediction be?
You know what? I would take a point.
Okay.
I definitely would. I know we want to win, but against a team like Coventry and their quality they got in their team, like before last night, I think we had 7 defeats in a row in the league at home. Like
we were
on a terrible run of form. So to have maybe back-to-back draws, I think that's a step in the right direction a little bit to maybe build a bit of confidence. But yeah, I think score prediction, I'm going to have to go Coventry. I think they've just got too much for us. And if we carry on gifting opportunities for the opposition like we did last night, with the own goal and then Jamal Lewis dwelling on the ball and Ronald also nearly got a second, I think it's going to be an easy scoreline for Coventry. So I'm going to go for a 3-1 Coventry win.
Shit the bed. Wow. Okay. That's interesting. But I know what you mean. Look, I said last night on the podcast straight after the game, I said, you know, we'd lost 7 straight league home games, you know, and it stopped the rot last night, did, with a draw. So you'd hope that we can build on it. And, you know, if the rookery or the stadium brings a noise whereby it was in the second half yesterday, where, you know, we could smell blood a little bit and, you know, the crowd got behind them. If we can have that atmosphere throughout, which is a very big ask at the moment, because to be quite frank, the players aren't giving they're all for the team. So why the hell should the supporters, you know, reciprocate that? And it is, you know, you're stuck between a rock and a hard place. So I'm going to go for a win. I think we'll win 2-0. And then as Jess Bishop-Jones has just said as well, I think that will be the end of Mr. Valerian Ismail. He might see the Birmingham game through only because that's before the international break. And we obviously know the Pozzos love a sacking during the international break. So he might just see the Birmingham game through the week after Cov and then be sacked. But I think if we lose this, regardless of how we do against Birmingham, I think he'll be gone. And that we'll save that for another podcast. But yeah, that's my thoughts on it, Ben.
Yeah, no, interesting. But yeah, I think we'll wrap it up there with you, Glenn. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Really do appreciate it. Will you be heading down this Saturday or will you be watching it? Or
I'll be watching it now. I made a decision that I was going to go Wolves with the FA Cup. So I did look at going to Watford, but then the Wolves away game came up, so I went Wolves instead. But no, I've been Watford before and it's a nice ground. A couple of our podcasts are going down there and yeah, there'll be a sad out Sky Blue Army again, as we always do, and we'll make loads of noise. So, yeah, it'll be a good game. Hopefully, it's a win.
Yeah, you definitely will make lots of noise. I remember when you came down in the League Cup a couple of years ago, and it was a sellout back then on a Tuesday night, and the noise you boys were creating was outstanding. And wherever you go in the country, your numbers is incredible. Really good following with Coventry City. But like I said, Glenn, thank you so much for joining us tonight. I really do appreciate it, and hopefully we can get to speak to you next season. If we don't get to speak to us next season, it either means you've gone up or we've gone down. So we'll keep our fingers crossed for maybe just you go up. If not, we'll speak to you next season.
Yeah, pleasure. All the best for the rest of the season after Saturday, lads.
Cheers, Glenn. Yeah, thank you. Have a good one. Oh, my bloody hope we don't go down.
I know. Do you know what? Only this week, I think I text you after one of the games. And I said that this is the first time this season that I've really, really been worried about it. Last night, a point really not the best. It's 7 points we're above now. I'm just looking at your locks, your QPRs, your Millwalls. I think Birmingham have got a bit of fight in them still. So, you know, at Sheffield Wednesday, they're picking up a bit of form. Stoke, I just can't see Stoke getting relegated. I know they're on a bit of a horrid run at the moment, but I just cannot see it. So, you know,
who not many people are talking about at the moment, obviously, I think Sheffield Wednesday are going to stay up, by the way. I think they're going to get out of it. So I think going down, obviously, Rotherham will go down. I think Stoke will go down because their form lately has been terrible and I don't think they've got enough to get out of it, especially with other teams around and winning. I see Huddersfield to continue to grow under their new manager and now have enough to stay up. Birmingham will be okay once Tony Mowbray's came back to from his illness. QPR will stay up. Millwall, I think, will stay up. Blackburn will stay up. The team who no one's really talking about and I think can slip into it, but only 2 points clear and it's Plymouth Argyle.
Thought you were going to say that. Yeah, they've got a caretaker in at the moment. And when he first come in, I think he didn't lose for the first however many games. He was on a really good run. And, you know, one of those games was at 3-3 on New Year's Day against us. And now I've got a couple of Plymouth fans on my Twitter, and now that they all want him gone, and it's wow. I thought they were going to come up. I didn't think they were going to turn up any trees, but I thought they were going to come up and have a solid sort of mid-table, middle of the road, not in any danger of going up, not in any danger of going down. But I think they, like you say, they are possibly very close to being sucked into this relegation.
Stephen Schumacher, he could end up getting both teams relegated, where he left Plymouth in a decent position. He joined Stoke. Okay, they weren't great, but they was in an okay position. He's ended up, he possibly ended up relegating both of them.
Mark makes a good point there. They've got Whittaker, who's one of the top scorers. I think he's the second highest scorer in the league. He's got 17
or 18. Ryan Hardy as well, really rate as well. So they have got firepower, but they do leak a lot of goals, don't they? And it's like our game, New Year's Day, 3-3, for an example. It's their home form possibly could keep them up, and their away form maybe could relegate them. That's enough about Plymouth. We're a Watford podcast, so apologies. We've gone off on a tangent a few times tonight, so one more won't hurt. We've got a few questions in here, Mike, Mark Schofield as well, so we'll jump straight into them. Team news, well, not team news, what would your team selection be for Saturday?
To answer his first question, I would probably bring Hamer back in. Backman was 100%, but he was at fault yesterday. If he either didn't call for it, or Andrews, I don't know what the mix-up was, but for me, he doesn't need to come rushing out there, and the communication, it's down to that. But other than that, he made a very important save, which could have made it 2-0 quite early on. And my God, the Vicarage Road would have absolutely gone toxic if that went 2-0. And there's no way we'd have come back, and we'd probably gone on to lose maybe 3 or 4. And he made a number of saves, really. So other than that stupid goal, I know it was quite a big error, he didn't do a lot wrong, but then again, he wasn't tested loads because Swansea weren't amazing. I think Hamer, he had obviously a bit of a wobble against Millwall. The goal, not really wanting to pin a lot of blame on him for that. It took quite a hefty deflection. You're probably looking at and pointing fingers more at the wall for breaking there and therefore getting the deflection to beat Hamer. You could argue that he gets enough of a hand on it and he's maybe got a bit of a case of the poppadom wrists there, and it just goes in. But at the end of the day, if it took quite a heavy deflection, it's going to knock him for 6, and he might have saw it late. So there we go. I'm hoping that's just a one-off. I think he will keep Backman in. I personally would bring Hamer back in. And other than that, I think Shaq has to start. Whether Sema, that injury that he picked up last night, I don't know. I've not heard anything since. We'll probably hear something tomorrow, maybe, from the press conference. But I would start Shaq. I thought Shaq was man of the match last night. And here it is. I wouldn't start Dennis. I think he's too selfish. Too many times last night, he got himself in positions where he could have played it through. And he wasn't the only one. Asprea, he could have played Ken through early doors as well. But for me, Dennis, I wouldn't start him. Now, this is what I think. This is what I would do. What I think will happen is Dennis will start because he's Emmanuel Dennis. And there's quite possibly Val maybe being told you have to play him. I don't know. But yeah, I wouldn't go with Dennis. I would probably throw Martins into the mix, to be honest, because we've not seen him for a while. And he might be someone that we can, you know, use to sort of pick the lock with their wing backs and maybe try and hit them on the counter there. So yeah, they're probably the changes that I'd make. Other than that, I think the team, they're the only real changes that I would personally make.
No, that's interesting. And to talk about Daniel Batman and Ben Hamer, I would probably stick with Daniel Batman, if I'm totally honest. Yeah. I haven't been massively impressed of Hamer in maybe the last two or three games. I do feel like... I also think that Val's obviously changed his tactics a little bit. We didn't see us playing out from the back yesterday where we were with Hamer. It was a bit more direct. It was the long balls forward. And I think Batman maybe suits that better than Ben Hamer. So I think he's going to keep his spot. And I think I want Daniel Batman to start as well. And I know it was a terrible goal to concede where he was rushing out, but I put that down to rustiness and the communication like you did, Mike. And he did pull off two really good saves. Just that Jamal Lewis dwelling on the ball and Renard one-on-one, good save. And then just before half-time, the header, he clawed back that was just going to go underneath his bar. Fantastic save. So I think I'd probably stick with Daniel Batman. The only other changes I'd maybe make to the team is probably two changes to the team. So obviously Ken Semmer's injured, so he's going to have to come out, and it's an easy replacement for me. Chap has to come in. Same as you last night, Mike. I thought he changed the game. He drove us forward. I thought he was fantastic. Great cameo from him. Really, really impressed with him. And I think that was a performance from him where he's saying, you have to start me. That's him knocking on the door. And I really like that about him. And then the second change, I would take out Jake Livermore. Equally like Ben Hamer, I think his performances of late have been below par. I've not been impressed with Jake Livermore. I feel like he's 2 seconds too late for every single challenge across the pitch at the moment. Last night, the amount of free kicks he gave away because he was too late to get to the ball. And I don't know if this is down to tiredness because he's a 34-year-old and he's played a lot of games this season, but I don't think he won the ball once last night. And it didn't help with the other two players with him in midfield. They could have given him a bit more security and a bit more protection, but I wasn't impressed with him last night. And we've spoken about Jake Livermore before by how he's a bit of a cheerleader on the pitch. I feel like he's gone a bit quiet on the pitch on that essence as well. And this is when times are getting tough like this, you want your leaders to show. And I don't think he has been showing that he's a bit of a leader. I'd be disappointed if he did have a captain's armband because he's not really leading by example. I think Hoot's doing fantastic at the back still, and he's definitely leading by example. So I think Val's made the right call by giving the captain's armband to Wesley Hoot. And I think we need to mention that Wesley Hoot kept the armband last night over Daniel Batman when he returned back to the team as well. So obviously he looks like he's the new club captain, which is fantastic. But to replace Jake Livermore, I think I'll bring in Kone. I thought Kone was good when he came on yesterday as well. The way he just drops a shoulder and drives you forward is what you need. And Tom Deli, second half, I thought he was really good. So I probably have a Tom Deli and Charcone in the midfield, and then who do you play with him? Do you put Espria in that area and put Chak over on the left, or do you do or swap it? Do you do Espria in the 10 and that? What would you do, Mike?
I think Chak's better. I don't know if that's what Mark's trying to say as well. I can't make head to toe of that, but I think Chak's better in the middle. I don't think he's as effective out wide, so I would probably maybe look at putting him in that middle. But just to go back on a couple of points you made there with Livermore and Kone. Firstly, with Livermore, I think maybe we are seeing a bit of fatigue, a bit of tiredness. You know, he's not the youngest, and he's gone through quite a sort of long, arduous championship campaign. But I also think the last couple of games whereby Val has just sort of scrapped what we've been playing recently in terms of the formation, the way that we're setting up, I think we're seeing Livermore being asked to do a different role to what he's been doing. So, you know, I think that's possibly why we're not seeing Jake have the impact that he's had recently.
Yeah.
Just to sort of back him up on that. But still, you'd expect him to be able to adapt no matter what. So, but I agree, you know, he hasn't quite been the player that he has been in recent months. And I think last night probably summed up his performances of late. You know, that those clever little fouls that he wins us, and those clever little shirt pulls that he gets away with and everything, just did not come off last night, and he was getting penalised left, right and centre, and he was quite frustrating to watch. And just on Kone as well, it depends what version of Kone. I think we've said on this podcast before, you can watch Kone come off the bench and be like, wow, this guy's incredible. You know, he did so last night. He come off the bench, he had a solid game. But then you'll start him, and it's almost like he has to, it takes him a few minutes to get into the game. He never carries on where he left off, and he's very frustrating. So, for me, if he's going to start, he's got to be on it. And I think Mark makes a good point there as well. Yesterday, I don't know whether Val will set up the same, but yesterday it was quite clear the space that was in that midfield, Swansea didn't exploit it half as much as I thought they would. They really, really didn't. And a team like Coventry are going to come, and they're going to exploit that. And if we get overrun in the middle, we're fucked, to put it bluntly. So for me, I might not have thought that through, but I would probably be looking to play. I mean, I said I would have kept Livermore in the team, but if Livermore comes out, then Kayembe has to come in. Sierelta, yes, DM, he does all right, but I think he's a walking yellow card if he starts. So I do worry about the quality that Coventry possess in the middle of the park. If you play Sierelta, is he going to last the 90 minutes? And I don't mean fitness-wise. I mean, is he going to be seeing a card from the referee that gives him his marching orders? So I think he will stick with Livermore. I wouldn't grumble too much if he does, but only if he's asked to play that role that he's been playing. Because last night we saw him pressing higher up more and playing more as a traditional number eight. So, I would stick with Livermore. That's what I'd do. But he has to play how he's been playing of late.
Well, what we've seen in the last week or so is Val looks like he's getting a bit desperate. He's obviously knowing that he's on borrowed time, as maybe Dean Austin would say. So he has mixed up his tactics lately. I think that's why we've seen Daniel Backman come back into the side. We're not playing it out from the back anymore. We're getting it forward quicker. I did think his distribution was quicker yesterday, Daniel Backman. He threw it out a couple of times, which was decent. And it's longer balls. It's more direct. And I think hopefully that might benefit Watford, because when we're passing it around the back, especially at home, the fans are going to be on your back. And we saw that after 15 minutes the other day. We was fed up with it, and we've had it all season. We're not entertained by that at all. So we just want to see a team with a bit of passion and pride, though. So, and like you said earlier, Mike, we just need the fans to maybe get behind the boys. But what we're seeing at the moment is, and I don't blame the fans, because you and me are one of them, We need to see something on the pitch to give us something to shout about. It's down to the players to get us off our seats and give us a bit of joy and something to shout about, because at the moment we haven't seen anything like that, and it's been a terrible run of form. But luckily we stopped the rot last night and picked up a point. Okay, we could have maybe been a bit stronger in that second half to try and find that second goal. Maybe too many touches in the penalty area when we should have maybe got it off first time, like we saw with Emmanuel Dennis the other day, where he took a touch, get it around the defender and bang it into the back of the net. So just wasn't really falling for us last night. But luckily it was a 1-1 draw. But I think we'll wrap it up there, and we're going to be back this Sunday for a review of the Coventry City game at Vicarage Road this weekend. It's going to be an interesting game. It's either going to end nicely or it's going to end badly. If it ends badly, we've already picked that we reckon Val will be off, because I don't think Gino is going to sit on this for too much longer. But if we win, it will be a miracle, and we'll be a lot more happier when we're discussing the review. But we'll see you all soon. Come on, you Horns.
Sports Social Podcast Network.